I think all of us have listened and heard enough about the political atmosphere that we're in today. I find it absolutely ironic that here we have the two leading candidates for the President of the United States. And the big question that we are asking about each one is, are they trustworthy? Are they honest? And can we believe them? And according to the polls, over 50% of Americans polled do not believe that we can trust them, or that they are honest, or that they are capable of telling the truth all the time. We live in a time when we need the right man. And I'd like to talk about a man who was the right man at the right time today. He was a man who I think we can all admire in many ways as a person that stood up to what was right. He stood up for what was truth. No matter how much of the opposition, no matter how much he was in disagreement with the majority, he was willing to take whatever they wanted to throw at him, but he was absolutely, totally honest in what he wanted to do. I really like this man. And the more you read about him, the more you study about him, I think you probably would really like this man too. His name is Caleb. A man of God. A man who served God. We first come in contact with this man way back early on, and we will follow through a little bit of his progression and what happened. But we find they were encamped on the at Kadesh Barnea, which is an oasis in the Negev Desert on the south of Palestine. And the people of Israel were all there. It had only been about a year from the time they had gone from Mount Sinai, or before that, before they had come out of Egypt. It only a year's time had elapsed. And here they were encamped there at Kadesh Barnea, and they were preparing to go into the land of Canaan and to possess it. This man that we will meet face to face in a little while had been there when God opened the Red Sea. He was there when God gave his blessings, and they had the Passover, and he killed the firstborn, and he had seen all of the various miracles that had been going on as they were preparing to come out of Egypt. He was there when Moses struck the rock, we know, when they were thirsty, and he saw the water literally leap out from a solid rock in a huge gush. Right from a solid cliff. And you would think that somebody who sees something like that would totally believe and trust in whatever else God wants to do, but that's not the case, is it? It's amazing how forgetful human beings are. And we will find that this man, Caleb, was one who had a good memory of things that God had done. Perhaps that's one of the questions we should ask ourselves as we begin this journey, biographical journey through the life of Caleb. One of the things that we could ask ourselves is, how good of a spiritual memory do you have? How good of a recall do you have about the things that God has done in your life? Do you recall the fantastic miracles whether it may not be like the opening of the Red Sea, and it may not be raining down manna from heaven, although I would suggest that all of us are getting a lot of manna rained down even upon our lives today, if we're willing to look for it and go out and search for it and pick it up, just like the ancient Israel. But the question is, do we have the memory and the recall that Caleb had? Because that really formed the backbone and the crux of his faith in God, was his recall of what God had done and what he has been doing. So he was there when God gave the Ten Commandments. But I want to go back then and pick up the story in the book of Numbers, chapter 13 and 14, about this man as they were going. And we first meet Caleb when he's a 40-year-old man. And we find that he was already a recognized leader among the tribe of Judah. And picking it up in chapter 13 of the book of Numbers, he was no little non-essential individual, even back prior to him becoming one of the scouts who went up into the land of promise. And so we find in verse 1, he says, "And the Lord said to Moses, saying, send you men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel, and every tribe of their fathers shall send a man, every one a ruler among them." So this individual, whoever he was going to be from each one of the differing tribes, the 12 different tribes, each one sent a ruler of the tribe, a well-respected, renowned, an individual who had a lot of different qualities to him. And so he says, "And so Moses," verse 3, "by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All of those men were heads of the children of Israel." Other translations say they were princes among the tribes. High positions of rulership. People looked to them. People went to them for questions and for the answers that they wanted answered. And then I won't read down through, but all each one of these tribes, but coming down to verse 6, it says, "And so of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh." He was that prince or that ruler that was selected out of all of the people. Realize Judah was the largest of all of the tribes. They numbered most of the time somewhere around 74,000 individuals who were in the tribe of Judah. So here you have this man who was the one selected out of 74,000 people to be their representative to go up and look at the land of promise. Do you think they wanted to send somebody they couldn't trust and they couldn't believe in what was going to come back? And so he was one of the people that God directed Moses to select. These men were going to go out and explore the land of Canaan that he was giving to the Israelites. Going on in the rest of chapter 13, we find that they went on their mission. I'm not going to read all of this, but from about verse 17 going on. "But they left and they spied out the land of promise that God had given to and promised to give to Israel. And so Caleb and his 11 friends from the other tribes all left on a reconnaissance trip into Canaan, and they go north. See, they were encamped south of the border on the Gate Negev down by Kadesh Barnea. So when they were going to go in and search out the land, they went north from where they were into the land of Canaan. And then they proceeded along a mountain ridge, which is one of the main features of the land of Canaan, along a mountain ridge that is basically the backbone of Palestine or the land of promise. And went on their way north. So on that journey, they went through a special place called Hebron in the south, and then proceeded from Hebron all the way to Rehob, which was on the far north side of the land of promise, of the land of Palestine. Now, I don't think they just stayed on a mountain ridge. They were to investigate all of the area. So they probably wound back and forth, going east and west, going up along this mountain, going north, all the way up to the north part. Who knows what they were posing as? I don't know. They may have been posing as traitors. They may have been posing as any number of things that they were doing. But they were looking for things to spy out the land, to see what was there. It says in verse 17, and Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is. So their walking orders, or their papers, were to see what the land was like. But not just the land, but also see the people that are dwelling therein. Whether they are strong, or are they weak, are they few, or are they many. And verse 19, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities there are in the land that they are dwelling in. Are they in tents, or are they in strongholds, fortified cities? What are we going to run into when we proceed to take this land that God has promised to give you? So these men, these 12 men, were assigned a very important job as special ops, you might say, chosen to do a special job in seeing what the land was like. Interestingly enough, you know, God has chosen you and me also to be special ops, in one sense, to spy out the land of promise spiritually today. That we also have been chosen as Caleb was to assess what's going on, what's happening. We'll get to this a little later on, but big question is, what kind of a report are you going to give of that search that is going on about the kingdom of God? How much are you going to be, like Caleb, honest and truthful in the face of all of your adversaries and your enemies, and say, it is a good land, it is a good system, it is a special land that is flowing with milk and honey? And we've gone from north, or from the south all the way to the north and back again. Are we going to give a good report? And so they went on this journey and they searched it out. And one of the particular places that they paid special attention to was the city of Hebron in the south. Now, Hebron was a walled city in the south. It is perched almost on top of the mountain. the city of Hebron. You may also remember in your biblical history that Abraham lived there, and there was a tree called the Tree of Mamre that was right there by the city of Hebron. Abraham had been there. He had made that basically his home site for much of the time. And yet that was where Caleb went. It was a walled city in the south, and its elevation is about 3,000 feet, and that's pretty high for that area to be 3,000 feet in elevation. That's higher than we are here, right? It's pretty high up. It was an ancient city. Actually, it says that it was built 7 years before Zoan was built in the nation of Egypt. So this city that they paid special attention to, actually, probably if we were to guesstimate, was built somewhere around 1700 BC. The city of Hebron in the nation of Israel. And the spies went and they saw that this city was a very strongly fortified city. And it was fortified not only by walls, but it was fortified by guys called Anak or Anakim, right? Giants who lived there. Huge guys. Many of them had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. Big guys. And so they had gone through the land. They had searched it out. And during that search, Caleb, as we will find in a little while, paid special attention to this mountainous region. He's paid special attention to this well-fortified city called Hebron. And he took a special mental note that seemed to be the main fortress area of any resistance in going through that southern part of in Palestine was going to be coming from this city here on the crest of the mountain called Hebron, defended by huge walls and by giants that were there. And so he took a mental note of what opposition there might be. So then they return. The spies come back in verse 26 going on, and they bring back a huge cluster of grapes that they are carrying on a pole between these guys, because they took of the abundance of the land. And we find in verse 28 of chapter 11, or chapter 13, as they came back, he says in verse 27, pick up the story, and so they told him, that is, they told Moses, and he said, we came unto the land whither you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So he said, hey, have a look at this huge cluster of grapes that is here. And nevertheless, he says, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And he says that the Amalekites live in the south, the Hittites and Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites are dwelling over along the coast of Jordan. And so they brought back this report of, yeah, it's a good land. We like being a part of the body of Christ, but you know, it's got its problems. It's not all good. It has its giants up there that we have to face, and sometimes we are not honest in our report any more than what these other 10 were. And so then we pick it up in verse 30 of chapter 13. And Caleb, he was listening all this time to these 10 people. Now, I could well imagine during all of his trip and coming back, knowing they were going to have to give a report to Moses, that these 12 men had confided in each other and had tried to work out, well, what are we going to report back there? And had tried to help each other come to the same conclusion, you know, like 12 people on a, or 9 people on a jury. How are we going to reach a unanimous conclusion here? That these 12 people probably had looked at all the different things and they were now trying to build up their case. I can well imagine Caleb and Joshua were facing all kinds of opposition from the other 10. Probably saying, and you guys aren't going to be ratting on us, are you? You're not going to spoil our report, are you? Are you going to join us and tell Moses what this land is? So these, I'm sure they faced all kinds of opposition. They were probably had their arms twisted to some degree by the other 10 saying, come on now, join us. Let's give this report and we'll all be unified in our report. So this report came back. And verse 32 says, and they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants. And all the people that we have seen are men of great stature. Nothing like exaggeration, a little bit. Not all the people in all of Canaan were of great stature. Only one city that had the giants and the Anakim in it. But that's the one they remembered. That's the one they had a problem with. And so they brought up this evil report, and they said, it eats up all the inhabitants of the land. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. A key verse, by the way, that we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. You know, if you put your trust in human ability, we are as grasshoppers. But if you're going to put your trust in God, and in what God can do, we should not ever look like grasshoppers in the face of opposition. We should be like Caleb, as we will see a little while. He was loyal. And so we find then in chapter 14 that all night long this went on. Can you imagine a camp of 600,000 men plus women and children, and all of the tents all the way around, that they were all crying and they were weeping and they were sad about what was going on. And it says in verse 1, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and they cried. They were sobbing. And the people wept that night. Can you imagine Caleb and Joshua being there, listening to all of the moaning and groaning and sobbing and crying that was going on in all the tents around the whole place? And they thought, and we're the only ones? all the rest of these people? Are we going to thwart their plan now? Are we going to be the scapegoats that they use now to criticize? And so verse 2, all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. Hey, they had nothing to do with it. It wasn't Moses and Aaron who went up there. And the whole congregation said to them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness. Not the first time they had said that. Every time they ran into a problem, they said that. Every time they got a little hungry, they said that. Every time they got a little thirsty, that's what they said. When the snakes were biting them, that's what they said. Let's go back to Egypt. And he said, wherefore, verse 3, has the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, and our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt? And so then they said, let's make us a captain, and let's return down to where we can eat our onions and our garlic and all the, in quote, good things down in the land of Egypt. And so these 10 complained and brought back a bad report. It's interesting that 10 out of 12 gave a false report. As part of the church of God, it makes us wonder sometimes, if we were to take 12, how many of those 12 would be like the other 10 spies and admit that, yeah, being a part of the church of God is lovely. It has lots of advantages. It's great. It's magnificent. But, you know, it's full of troubles. It's full of all kinds of difficulties that we face on a continuing basis. And unfortunately, I don't know whether it would be, in this case, 12, you know, 2 out of 12, or would it be 50-50? Well, I don't know what it would be. The only thing I know is each one of us should ask ourselves, as an individual, what is our relationship? So anyway, in verse 7 it says, and they spoke then to the company of the children of Israel, saying, and this is verse 6. Let's back up a little bit. And so Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. They were pretty upset over this whole thing that they had been hearing all night. They were pretty upset at what insinuations were being made about the leadership in the body of Christ. They were pretty upset about what they wanted to do to go back into captivity and freedom, captivity to sin and to go back into Egypt. But we find then that these two individuals, Joseph the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, said in verse 7, and they spoke unto all of the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search, it is an exceedingly good land. If, in verse 8, you ought to have marked, underlined in our hearts and in our minds, if not written on our heart and mind, as the Calebs of the church today, if the Lord delight in us, then we will bring us, then he will bring us into this land. And he will give us a land which flows with milk and honey. Great big word, that if. Brings up all kinds of questions, doesn't it? If the Lord delights in us. Some of us might sometimes have doubts about that. We all probably at some time or the other will go through a time where we might have a doubt of whether God is really pleased with some of us at certain times. But what do we do about that? Unfortunately, in verse 9, it shows what these people did. And what Joshua and Caleb were saying was, don't rebel against the Lord. Don't allow your complaining and your belly aching and all of your problems and all of your weeping all night long, don't allow it to reach the stage of rebellion, to where we rebel in heart and in mind against what God's plan and what He wants us to do. I believe that Joshua is a type of Christ. I think we know that by very name, that he was a type of Christ. If Joshua is a type of Christ, who do you think Caleb might be? Who does he represent? I dare say that Caleb represents the church of God, the people of God, the spirit-begotten children of God. Later on, we're going to find that Caleb had an exceptional situation. You know what it was? He had another spirit, right? He and Joshua had a different spirit. As people in the church of God today, you think we don't have a different spirit? A different motivation? So I think that, at least in principle, that Caleb was one who followed. He followed God, and we'll get to this verse in a few minutes. He followed God fully. Other translations say he followed God completely or wholeheartedly. It's interesting, the name Caleb. Most translators will tell you that the word Caleb or probably means dog. And that is one of the translations of the Hebrew word Caleb, that it means dog. Well, if it means dog, dogs are pretty loyal, okay? They're pretty faithful. And they follow their master wherever the master goes, because they are faithful in everything to their master. But there's another translation for the name Caleb, and which probably is more accurate in what it means, and that is all heart. That the word Caleb can mean all heart. That was his very essence of who he was. That Caleb didn't have any hypocrisy or any divisiveness in his own mind. He was all heart to do it God's way, the way God wanted it done. So he was, whether you want to take one or the other or both, maybe we could say that as a dog following his master, he does it with his whole heart, right? Caleb was a person who followed his master with the whole heart. He didn't have any reservations, had no regrets, and he knew that he would stand against all opposition. Whatever people threw at him, whatever they wanted, he had a positive attitude. It's interesting, if you go back, how when he was talking here, and picking it up here in verse 8, how many times Caleb and Joshua refer to the name of God, the Lord. You know, in the evil report that was brought back by the other 10, not once was the Lord's name mentioned. Not once. Here we find in these few sentences, beginning in verse 8, from Caleb and Joshua, if the Lord, the Yahweh, the Eternal, the Creator, if the Lord delight in us, then He will bring us into this land and give us a land which flows with milk and honey. Verse 9, only rebel not you against the Lord. Don't rebel against the Eternal One. And do not fear you, the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. And the Lord is with us. Fear them not. And then in verse 10, but all of the congregation bade stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of congregation before all the children of Israel. Three out of the four expressions by Joshua and Caleb refer to the Eternal One. His reliance was not upon humanity or what human beings could do. He fully trusted in what God wanted him to do. And he said, don't fear. Going down to verse 24, picking up the story a little bit farther down, in verse 24, he says, but my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and has followed me fully, him will I bring into the land wherever whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it. This Caleb, he had a different attitude, a different frame of reckoning. He believed in what God was capable of doing. He did not look to human situations or the weakness of human beings. Back in the book of Deuteronomy, we'll find, going ahead, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 1, we'll find an expression also like this in Deuteronomy 1 and verse 36 about these people. And verse 34, he says, and the Lord heard the voice of your words and was wroth, and he swore, saying, surely there shall not one of them, of these men, of this evil generation, see that good land which I swore to give unto your fathers. You know what? That included Aaron. That included Moses. That included all that were 20 and above. Everybody. Not one of them went into the land of promise, except Caleb and Joshua. Only two. And all of those 600,000 men of war that came out of the land of Egypt to go into the promised land, you know how many made it? Two. You know why they made it? It wasn't because they were strong of their human spirit. It wasn't because they knew how to do all of the things. It was because there was a different spirit in them. And they trusted God. They believed in God. They followed Him wholeheartedly. The New International Version uses the word wholeheartedly. The King James uses the word holy or fully. Either way, it's that you trust God and you put your strength in Him. Perhaps He's what some people call a possibility thinker. Okay. Caleb was thinking about possibilities of where this was going to go into the future, because he had been promised that he would actually be given this mountain and this land as a possession. He wanted that mountainous area around Hebron. He was thinking of all the possibilities that this might present to my children, to my children's children, and to all of my future generations down through time. Later on, you will find he gave it to his seed and his children. And he even gave an inheritance to his son-in-law, who married his daughter, Aksa. And he was a worthy individual. Just so happens that he was Caleb's younger brother. Okay? Possibility that means half-brother, I'm not sure. There's a one thing that you will find if you go through trying to figure out all the genealogies, you're going to wind up in a headache, okay? It just is very difficult to do. I will say this, that in the line of Caleb, going all the way back to Hezron, who was the son of Judah, you will find that the name Caleb probably occurs over and over and over again. You will find if you go to the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 2, and I'm not going to go there, but just if you really want to get involved in genealogy, go to chapter 2 of the book of 1 Chronicles and try to figure out all of the genealogies of Caleb. Because you will find that he was the son of Hezron, and he had a son named Hur, who had a son named Uri, who had a son named Bezaleel, who was the man who was inspired by God to do the construction of the tabernacle, right? Bezaleel. Now you try to fit all of that in. If Joshua was only 40 years old when he came out of the land of promise, and he had not only a son, but a son's son and a son's son's son, you're going to have some problems with it. But the best answer that I can figure out was that Caleb, like so often in a family, the same name will repeat over and over down through time, right? As it's used. So the Caleb, who was the son of Hezron, who was the son of Judah, may not, and I'm only saying this question mark, may not be the same Caleb which went to spy out the land. Now they were of the same tribe of Judah. And it goes on down through time. You will find that Caleb remarried. After his first wife died, and she had other children after that by another wife. So I'm only telling you, if you want to figure out all of the genealogy. I went on our website, by the way. United Church of God has an answer for some of those genealogical questions. If you want to go and put into your computer, is Hezron and Jephunneh the same individual? They both were supposedly the father of Caleb, right? So I just put in a question mark. Is Jephunneh and Hezron the same individual? And guess what comes up at the top of all of these possibility of going researching? United Church of God had an answer there. It was interesting. So not saying that it's totally, when you get into genealogy, I'm only saying possibilities that possibly exist. But he was a man of possibility. He was a man who thought about the future and about the possibilities. So again, are we trusting in the strong arm of God, or are we trusting in ourselves? And you can go through all that. I want to go over now to the book of Joshua, to where we pick up the story a little bit later in Joshua. Chapter 14. And what was happening here in chapter 14 of the book of Joshua. Let me bring up another possibility. Again, as you're reading through these things, you will probably ask yourself a question. Was the city of Hebron taken and conquered twice? Once by Joshua, when they took over the land of Canaan, and again by Caleb. It does bring a question mark, and the possibilities that do arise from that. There are a couple of possible answers as to what happened. And one is that probably the city of Hebron and the southern part of Palestine was taken over by Joshua when they were conquesting the land. It seems to say that he totally conquered that whole area and did not leave it, any of it, unconquered. Then if Joshua then conquered it, why then do we find then that Caleb, we have the account, went in and conquered it later? Well, probably. And again, this is only a probability that it was conquered by Joshua, but actually the people who did the conquering were his lieutenants or his right-hand men, which would have been Caleb and the others. Joshua got the credit for it, but probably Caleb and them did actually take care of taking that hill country, and that Caleb wanted to take care of that. So coming back over then to chapter 14 of the book of Joshua. Either way, it doesn't really make a big difference. Many cities were captured once, but since they were not totally occupied by the Israelites, when they left, a lot of times the Canaanites returned to some of those cities. You will find it happened in Jerusalem. It happened in a lot of other cities that because they weren't able to go in and totally settle the whole city and the regions around it, that once it was captured, it doesn't mean that people did not return there. And that might be a good example for us. Do you sometimes conquer certain problems and enemies and find later that they have come back and retaken the territory? And sometimes you have to reconquer it, right? Retake it. It probably was that Caleb then had to go in and retake the area. And he wanted at it. It says in chapter 14 and verse 6. I love this about Caleb. He's one of my heroes of a spiritually thoughtful individual. So he says, then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, right close to the Jordan River there. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenzanite, said unto him, you know the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and you in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Notice that last two words. I brought back my report that was in my heart. Not what I saw with my eyes, necessarily. What I brought back was a report that was in my heart. He says, nevertheless, my brothers that went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. Let me just pause for a moment and say, interesting concept. Caleb followed the Lord. He never got in front of him. He never became presumptuous and or got out in front of what God wanted done. He says he wholly followed the Lord. So a good lesson for all of us sometimes. Do we follow what God is doing, or do we sometimes get a little presumptuous and we began to kind of go out front and not say, well, God, you follow me for a while. You know, doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. So in verse 9 he says, and so Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land whereon my feet have trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. You remember when you were walking through that territory as a spy going up and searching out the land? You went into Hebron and you went through the fortified gates and you observed the Anakim and you observed all of the hill country round about there. And he says, going on in verse 9, and so Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land wherein your feet have trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord your God, or my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. He was 40 years old when he first spied out the land. Now he's been wandering in the desert, in the wilderness, another 40 years. And there's been 5 years of conquering the territory in the land of Canaan. So 45 years added to the 40 years that he was when he was. So at this time he is 85 years old. Do you think he was going to shrink from the job that God wanted him to do? He says, coming on down in verse 10, and now behold, the Lord has kept me alive. Now he didn't say, my genes are good, and genetically I'm a sound, healthy guy. And I lived 85 years because I'm good health and I ate right and all that. He said, the Eternal kept me alive. As he said, these 45 years since, even since the Lord spoke this word to Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. But I am as yet, I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. Now, I don't know whether physically he was. But you know what? His mindset was such that he considered himself as strong as he was when he first went into that land and saw those Anakim. And he saw that area around Hebron. And he says, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. I wanted to go immediately when I saw that. I came back and I gave my report. I wanted us all to go in and drive them out. But my 10 partners persuaded the people otherwise. And they brought about the anger of God. And now I've wandered in this wilderness along with everybody else for 40 years. Every moment of that 40 years, I've been waiting to take that mountain again. To go back to where I was 40 years earlier, 45 years earlier. And I went at it. So as yet I am as strong. If nothing else, he was as strong in the eternal God as he was when he first went. Not in his own flesh. As my strength was then, even so is my strength. And what was his strength then? His strength was in God, not in himself. Now, therefore, give me this mountain. I love that expression. As he's talking to Moses and expressing this to God. All right, I looked at that mountain 45 years ago. I want that mountain. He was a mountain man. It's interesting that the name Jephunneh means hunter. I don't know whether he came from a hunting family or what, but Jephunneh, the father, was a hunter. Maybe Caleb liked hunting. He liked the mountains. He liked the territory around it. So give me this mountain there whereof the Lord spoke in that day, for you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the eternal God will be with me. Again, where is his trust? If so be the eternal will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the eternal said. You talk about bold faith, confident faith. And so Joshua blessed him and gave to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. Now all of that whole territory was part of Judah's inheritance. But inside of that bigger area of Judah's inheritance was a special inheritance for the family of Caleb, which was the city of Hebron and the environs around it. That was his claim. And so Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenzanite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. Now it goes on and it gives a explanation in verse 16 that this city of Hebron had earlier been known by another city, which was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was that great man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. That this city of Hebron was where the Anakim made their home. That was their dwelling. And so we find later on in verse 13 of chapter 15. And so Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a part among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arba, or Hebron, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron. And Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. And he went up thence to the inhabitants of Debir, which was a close by city. And the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. And so Caleb said, he that smites Kirjath Sefer and takes it to him will I give Achsah, my daughter, to wife. And so then we get another individual involved, which was Othniel. Interesting that his family tradition follows on, because Othniel, you know who he was? He becomes the first judge during the times of the judges over the children of Israel. Othniel, who was the son-in-law of Caleb. This family was a very strong family, a deeply, in quote, converted family with the Spirit of God. And it passed from one generation to the next because they wholly followed in God. Question that we need to answer ourselves, do we have that kind of bold faith to believe in what God says, trusting in God, knowing that He will answer us and it will pass on to our future generations? Achshaz, the daughter of Joshua, or of Caleb, was a faithful individual. She married a faithful man who became Caleb's son-in-law, who became the first judge over Israel. Going back in history, one of the descendants of the people of Judah was Hur. Remember who Hur was? One of the individuals who held up the arms of Moses, you remember? Hur. Later on, Hur begot a son named Uri, who begot a son named Bezalel. It all comes down through that one family because they wholly trusted God. So our question, do we wholly and fully and wholeheartedly, are we all heart to do God's will?